मायापुर धाम की जाए, जगन्नाथ पुरी धाम की जाए, गंग माई जमुना देवी की जाए, भक्त देवी की जाए, तुलसी महारानी की जाए, समवेत भक्त वृंद की जाए, गौर प्रेमानंद, ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरियस टू श्री गुरु इन गौरंगा, ऑल ग्लोरियस टू श्री प्रभुपाद, नमः ओम विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण पुष्टाय भूतमे श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नीति नामे नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारि नमस्ते सुसुमन पसिचारि सुतम वंदे नम श्री गुरु श्री तापकम श्री गुरु वैष्णवमश्च श्री रूपम सर्वजातम सहगना रविनतम विधम स्थम सजीवम सद्वैतम सर्वदूतम परिजनम सहितम कृष्ण चैतन्य देवम श्री राधा कृष्ण परम सहगना लविता श्री विशाखम विधम स्थ ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
August 29, 2009 in Honolulu. We're reading from Canto 6, Chapter 18, TT Vows to Kill King Indra, and into 68 through 71. We'll be looking at truthfulness, authenticity. Dittirudhaya dadrishe
Dittirudhaya dadrishe
Kumaram anala prabhan
Kumaram anala prabhan
Indrena sahitan devi
Indrena sahitan devi
Paryatsu sharanindita
Paryatsu sharanindita Dittirudhaya dadrishe
Dittirudhaya dadrishe
Was pleased.
Anindita.
Being purified. We have this anala. Anala means without fault. Prabhan, brilliant. Anindita, again, without any fault. Sahitan, saha, with. Tusta is very pleased. She's feeling very happy. Translation, because of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Diti was completely purified. When she got up from bed, she saw her 49 sons along with Indra. These 49 sons were all as brilliant as fire and were in friendship with Indra, and therefore she was very pleased. Remember, she had gone to sleep. She had gone to sleep without washing her hands. She had eaten and she hadn't washed up before she went to bed. And I guess when Indra entered her womb and divided the children, they ended up being born. So when she woke up, she saw that all these children were born, and there were 49 children. So just imagine, you know, you're expecting one baby. The doctor said, okay, you're having one baby. We know some people who unexpectedly had twins. One of my good friends. Did you know?
A day before I had them.
A day before you had them. Wow. One devotee friend of mine was found out as she was delivering the babies. You know, she delivered the first baby, and then the doctor says, I think there's another baby in there. So sometimes a person, but imagine 49. Just imagine, you know, you're sleeping, and of course it's a nice kind of way to give birth. You just fall asleep, and you wake up, and there's your baby. You know, she woke up, and there was 49 babies. So a little bit of a surprise. And not only was there 49 babies, but the person that she wanted to kill with her one baby was also there. And they were all good friends. And when she saw that, when she saw that she had 49 beautiful, very beautiful, pure, effulgent children, and that they were hanging out being friends with Indra, she felt actually very satisfied. Now we might ask, why would she feel satisfied? What is our purpose in when we try to get back at an enemy? What's actually our purpose? What are we really looking for?
Satisfaction.
Yeah, we're really looking to feel peaceful and satisfied. We're trying to solve the problem. And what is the problem? When we have an enemy, what's the problem? What does it mean to have an enemy?
They want to hurt you.
They want to hurt you, but what's the problem we're feeling?
Hurt.
Hurt? Pain?
Fear of loss.
Fear?
Dissatisfaction.
Dissatisfaction? Or are we feeling some disconnection with that person? We're feeling a sense of separation, that person's interests and my interests are not the same. That person has interests that are different from mine, that are opposed to my interests. And because of that, we're feeling fear and pain and hurt. We're feeling a viyoga. We're feeling that this person and myself, we're not on the same weight, we're opposed to each other. And what we're looking for in vengeance is we want to solve that. Now, generally, like here, she's trying to solve it by just getting rid of that person. If something's not in harmony with me, I want to get rid of it. Of course, can you get rid of anybody? You can't actually kill anybody. It doesn't really work. What happens when you kill an enemy often? You get rid of an enemy. They may be born in your family next time, you know. So you may not really get rid of them until you solve the problem. So that kind of way of solving the problem, and of course, generally, most people don't kill, literally. But we try to kill in other ways. We may try to kill the person's reputation, and we may try to kill our relationship with them, or in some way we try to just stop the thing or go away. But what we're really looking for, ultimately, is what? And what is ultimately what's going to bring us satisfaction in terms of another living entity? What do we really want in terms of our relationship with other living entities?
Love
and connection. We want to feel they are in harmony with us. They are in the same wavelength. That's ultimately what we want. And trying to go about that by killing somebody or by getting them out of the way doesn't usually give us the sort of satisfaction that we want. This was brought up when we were at U of H, and this one man was talking about forgiveness. And one of the professors there said, well, I like feeling hatred towards my enemy. He said, I get almost the same satisfaction from hatred as I get from love. And he said that, you know, I can feel like I've forgiven someone, but as soon as their name comes up immediately, I feel hatred for them again. And that's even true if you kill your enemy. If you kill your enemy, then even afterwards, if you hear their name or think about them, that feeling will still arise. It's not that you feel, not that then you feel satisfied. Even if your enemy gets tortured, it's not that you feel, okay, now it's done. They're tortured and they're killed. Oh, sure. You find this is true. People will talk, you know, ill about some dead person who was tortured and killed. Because what's the real satisfaction we're looking for? We're looking at harmony of interest. That's really what we're looking for. So now DT has found that. She's found that now Indra has become her friend. Her genuine friend, and so she's satisfied. That was what she was really looking for. And you find that trying to achieve that through thinking in terms of friends and enemies and thinking in terms of attacking people will never bring us satisfaction. It's not our natural way of acting. It just does, there's no closure to it. There's no end to it. You're going to go on life after life after life after life after life being bound in enmity to somebody. What is the point of that? So here's how she found real, we find prayatusya. She actually became satisfied. Of course, one reason that she was able to find satisfaction in that is because of her purification by devotional service. Because as long as you're in the modes of passion and ignorance, you don't see what is the means to your true satisfaction. It's not obvious to you. You can't see what it is you really want. You see falsity. You see, oh, what I really want is this person to be destroyed. That will give me satisfaction. You don't see that you're going about looking for satisfaction in the wrong way. Okay, going on to text 69. Thereafter, but this is very interesting also, because the conversation that DT and Indra are about to have is not the kind of conversation that generally takes place between people. DT said to Indra, "My dear son, I adhere to this difficult vow just to get a son to kill you 12 Adityas." So she's saying, you know, I did this vow to kill you. You and your brothers. We don't usually say that. We don't usually go to people and say, by the way, I'm trying to kill you. You know, or I'm trying to hurt you. We're generally kind of sneaky about it. We go to people and say, oh, yes, 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 you're my good friend. I like you. And then behind their back, I prayed for only one son, but now I see there are 49. How has this happened? My dear son Indra, if you know, please tell me the truth. Do not try to speak lies. So she starts by herself speaking the truth. I was trying to kill you. I wanted one son to kill you, but, you know, you're here, and there's 49 children. I think you know something about this. Indra replied, "My dear mother." Now, why is he calling her mother?
You know, keep this straight.
Huh?
She's related, I forget.
How is she related? She's the sister of his mother. Well, not only is she the sister of his mother, but she's also his mother's co-wife. So she's his mother's sister and co-wife. She's his stepmother. My dear mother, because I was grossly blinded, or you could say that she's his aunt, Papados refers to her as her aunt. So you could say she's her stepmother because she's a co-wife, and she's an aunt because she's the sister of Aditi. Because I was grossly blinded by selfish interests, I lost sight of religion. So this is important. If we're going to apologize to somebody, it's often, and this is a very difficult thing to do. Hardly anybody can do this. It's extremely difficult to do. To really reveal what our ill motives were. Generally, we don't even reveal our ill motives to ourselves. You know, we say, well, actually, I was really just trying to serve Prabhupada and Krishna. And I don't know if I mentioned it here, but I was reading a thing that President Obama was talking about, how during the campaign, they asked Obama, Hillary Clinton, and McCain, what's your greatest weakness? Some interviewer asked them this question. So Obama was speaking first, and he said, well, sometimes I'm a little messy. And then Clinton and McCain both gave some answer like, well, I just want to help people too much. And I just get into helping people so much that sometimes I neglect my family or something like that. So recently Obama was talking about this, and he said, if I had known what the game was, then I would have said something like, my weakness is I really want to help old ladies cross the street. And sometimes they don't want to be helped, and they yell at me. So often when we make a mistake, we try to cover it like that. We say, well, really, I was just trying to help the old lady across the street, and somehow I didn't think of how to do it the right way, and so, you know, this and that happened. But that may be true sometimes, of course. But we very rarely will say to ourselves, wow, I was just being, like, grossly foolish and selfish and greedy, and, you know. So Indra's saying this. He says, of course, he said this to Krishna also after he's tried to kill everybody in Vrindavan. Says, I was grossly blinded by selfish interests, and so I lost sight of religion. Now, this sort of apology is very genuine. Now, by the way, you can't actually make this sort of apology to somebody who wants to destroy you. You can't do that. If somebody is out to destroy you, you can't really admit a weakness to them, just for practical purposes. But at least one should admit to oneself. Yeah.
In other words, most of the time when we apologize, we rarely do really apologize.
That's right.
We don't get to the root.
That's right. That's right. A real apology looks at two things. First of all, what was my actual fault? I mean, sometimes really it was just, you know, completely, how would you say, incidental. In other words, sometimes I hurt somebody without even knowing I hurt them and without any ill motives on my part at all. That happens. It does happen. You say something and innocently, and for that person, what you said is triggers off something in them that you had no awareness. You know, that doesn't. But there's, basically, I see there's three times when you hurt people. One time is when we're just completely unaware. We're just going about our business in life, and we have no intention to hurt somebody. We have no awareness that we hurt somebody. We have no ill motives, and it just sort of happens. You know, something like you pull out of a parking space and you scratch somebody else's car. You just didn't see them. You didn't intend to. Another time is when we know we're hurting other people, but we think that it's necessary in order to achieve some purpose. So we're thinking, I know this person's not going to like it. I know they're going to be upset. I know they're going to be hurt. But what can I do? I have to achieve X, Y, Z. I have to accomplish this. Or sometimes it's, I'm in so much pain, and I'm suffering so much, and I know what I'm saying is causing pain to this other person, but I can't do anything about it. I just have to do it. And the other time is when we maliciously want to hurt somebody, which is Indra's situation, where we actually, and I think that's more rare. The second is much more common than the third. But there are times when we think, you know, I really want to hurt somebody. And sometimes we're thinking, in order to get what I want, you know, if I want to get something, I have to say something very nasty in order to hurt somebody. Our intentions are to hurt, rather than being kind of a byproduct. So a real apology would be to look at what are my motives, to see in what way was I selfish, if that was the case, and also to understand what the other person was feeling. To really try to empathize what happened with the other person. As I was talking about yesterday, that a lot of people who have near-death experiences and have a life review, they see their life, they re-experience their life through the feelings of the people that were around them. So to try to do that when we're in this life, and that's a real apology. To say something like, wow, you know, I was just thinking about getting such and such done, and I knew it was going to cause you pain, and I was so involved in getting such and such done that I really didn't care about you. I wasn't taking your feelings into consideration. I was so absorbed in my own self, or I was so absorbed in the mission that I had that I neglected you. Which obviously I shouldn't do that, because part of getting something done is taking care of the people that are involved in getting it done, and then try to think of how the person might feel. You know, maybe you might have felt very confused, or you might have felt very hurt, or you might have felt very inconvenienced, or you might have felt in pain. And if that person didn't feel that way, they'll tell you. They'll say, no, I didn't feel that way. I just felt angry. Or I just felt sad, or I just felt scared, or something. And as soon as you do that, then the other person believes that you're sorry. And if you don't do that, frankly, the other person doesn't believe that you're sorry. If I just go to you and say, I'm really, really sorry. I mean, when people say to me, I'm really, really sorry, I don't believe them. I just don't believe them. I feel it's like the little child, you know, who's hit his brother over the head with a fire truck. And mommy puts him in his room and says, stay in your room until you can say I'm sorry to your brother. And he comes out and goes, I'm sorry. Now look at your brother when you say that. I'm sorry. Yeah. And usually the parent takes that because that's all they're going to get. And they're just, you know, okay. But it doesn't mean anything. You know, they have made no attempt to try to understand. And this is one of the purposes of karma. I'm never getting to this text 71, am I? Maybe I'll get there tomorrow. But this is the purpose of karma. What's the purpose of karma? To develop what? Why, if you kill a cow, do you have to take birth as a cow and be killed? To develop what? What's Krishna trying to develop? Empathy. That's this famous psychic, Edgar Cayce. He said, karma is meeting yourself. The whole purpose of karma is to develop empathy. If I don't intentionally choose to emotionally put myself in the shoes of the people that I've hurt, then I'll have to physically be put in the shoes of the people that I hurt, and I re-experience those emotions. And by the way, this is something that I say a lot. Whatever we get back, we're giving out. 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 We tend to think of it in reverse. Well, whatever I give out, I get back. And the things that I get back, I'm thinking, why am I getting these things? I don't deserve them. I'm a good person. And what I have found Just like something I said to you the other day, right? Remember when I said to you, hey, Ramananda Prabhu, you know, you complained about such and such and such, but you actually did that to someone else. Remember I told you? So what I found is that this is, once I started thinking about this being true for me, once I started thinking maybe karma applies to me, maybe it's not just some philosophy that's in the books that applies to everybody else, especially the people who hurt me. Really, it definitely applies to them. Whoa, you know, when somebody hurts me, I'm thinking, well, I know they're going to get theirs. Okay, you know, no problem. Krishna's going to take care of that. They're going to have to suffer as much as they made me suffer. Maybe they'll even suffer a little bit more. You know, but somehow I never thought that that was applying to me, and that all the suffering that I was getting, I was just the victim. As this professor was saying at that meeting, he said, the high moral ground nowadays is to be the victim. Then you don't have to take any responsibility. Then everybody else has to just do something for me. I don't have to do something. But according to our philosophy, that's not true. Nobody's a victim. Well, if nobody's a victim, that means I'm not a victim. Say, wait a minute, I'm a devotee. I'm a devotee. So I'm not getting any karma. Well, no, Krishna still deals with the devotees that way. If we don't have empathy, because the purpose of karma is empathy. And because without empathy, you can't have what? Connection. And without connection, which we're talking about yoga. He's supposed to say, well, yoga means connection. So there's two aspects to yoga. One is to have connection with Krishna, and the other is to have connection with all other living entities. And this is the main religious principle in every religion of the world. Jesus was asked, what's the main thing? He said, to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and all thy mind. And the second, which is like the first, is to love thy neighbor as thyself. And what is Krishna talking about? He's not just talking about having connection with him. He's saying, Vijayavanaya Sampane, you see all living entities equally. And Lord Kapiladeva says, if you make an offering to Krishna, but you're not in connection with all living entities, it's like making your offering into ashes instead of into fire. Like Jesus said, if you bring your offering to the altar and you have some discord with your brother, put down your offering, solve the discord with your brother, and then you can make the offering. Otherwise, that's kanista. I just want a relationship with Krishna. That's why we have to be vegetarian. That's why we're saying to people, if you're not vegetarian, how are you going to make spiritual advancement? Talk about lack of empathy with other living entities. And we say to people, you know, who is this neighbor Jesus talked about? Is this just other people from, you know, Japan like you? You're Japanese. Did I just have to love the other Japanese people? Or does it mean I just love the other Catholics? Or I just love the other humans? Don't you have to love the other animals? And then we have difficulty loving even the other human devotees. So this karma is to develop this sense of empathy, this connection. This is what Krishna talks about in the sixth chapter. He says one should see the suffering and distress of others as one sees one's own. So this, whenever I'm getting something, if you try this experiment, but you have to try it genuinely. And when you experience something, try going to Krishna and say, Krishna, please show me. But it can't be, hey, Krishna, why don't you show me how I'm doing that? It doesn't work. You won't respond very well to that. But if you say, Krishna, please show me how this thing that I'm getting back, how I'm putting it out. Because we're usually putting it out in a little different form, you know, maybe with a different person in a different circumstance. So it doesn't look the same to us. It looks different to us. And say, Krishna, show me. And he'll show you. He really will. I found that every time he will show you. They'll say, this is how you're also hurting someone. And then there can be a genuine apology. Then I can say this kind of thing here, what he's saying. He's saying, I was grossly blinded by selfish interests, so I lost sight of religion. When I understood that you were observing a great family spiritual life, I wanted to find some fault in you. So he says, I'm looking for fault in you. When I found such a fault, I entered your room and cut the embryo to pieces. So he's saying, you know, I wanted to destroy your child. So should we read this purport, or should we do that tomorrow? Let's go talk on this purport.
Sure.
Probably not short enough. Maybe we'll read this verse again tomorrow, and we'll speak on this purport tomorrow. Okay. Taking 3 days to get to this purport. Yes, sir. That's right. Probably said you can take 3 months to speak on one verse.
Okay. I've got 30 seconds.
Yes.
I think almost answered my question. The last comment you made, you have to pray to Krishna to reveal. But the thing is that this is when I offend people, because I see it later on, okay, yeah, that's right, I did the same thing, but at the time I really didn't understand that I was offending them.
Why don't we understand at the time?
We're too selfish.
Which is selfish, like Indra said. Which you, we're caught up in what I want. I'm so caught up in what I want that I either I'm not aware that I'm hurting other people. If I'm not aware that I'm hurting other people, then that means that I've, and I'm not talking about completely accidental. Completely accidental, you pull out of a parking space and you scratch somebody's car and you didn't even see the car. I'm not talking about that. But I'm talking about when I know I'm not paying attention. Like, let's say I'm trying to pull out really carefully and I accidentally scratch the car. But let's say I'm in such a hurry, I'm thinking, I've got to get to where I'm getting to. Like the guy who smashed into my Toyota van. He was going to work and he was late, so he didn't stop at the stop sign. So in one sense, you can say that was unintentional. But in another sense, he was completely absorbed in himself. And therefore, he didn't notice the other car. He didn't look for the other car, is the point. He didn't look. He didn't think, maybe there's another car. So when I'm very absorbed in myself, I don't look, I don't stop, I don't think, and say, how is this going to affect the other people around me? So the cure for that is to say, that's how I'm going to be judged. That's how I'm going to be judged. That's how I'm going to judge myself. That's really how the directors of the universe are going to look at my life. They're going to say, did you look both ways before you went in the other street? Or were you just so focused on, I got to get to my job on time? So start looking.
Okay. Then I have another question. So there's other circumstances when I know what I'm going to do may offend this person, but I have no idea how to avoid it.
Isn't that hard? And often I find that happens with people like me who are very task-oriented and I want to get something done. And I want to get it done now. You know, that happened to me at UH when I had to say to this one devotee, please don't play cartels. And I knew he was fried. I could see it in his body language. You know, he wanted to hit me. Now, in retrospect, what I probably should have done was say, was take the time and talk to him. And I tried a little bit. I said, Prabhu, I know you're feeling really angry and I'm really sorry about that. And, you know, it didn't work, but at least I tried. I mean, I didn't make an effort to try to understand his feelings and say, you know, I understand you're feeling angry, but I understand it's disturbing to you. I know you really wanted to play the cartels. I said, well, I'm sure you know what you're doing. But at least some effort. You know, you can't always be successful. Maybe I still need to go to apologize to him, but at least make some effort to try to connect with the other person. Something like, I realize that this is difficult for you. I realize you've had a hard day. I realize you're tired, and I'm sure that what I'm doing is going to upset you, but I don't know how else to do this. Maybe you can help me. You know, it's really tough when there's not much time. When you're just about to walk on the stage and all of a sudden you see the person with the cartels and you're saying, don't play the cartels now. And you see their whole body language gets like, you know, and it's tough. But at least to have some empathy for the person. At least not to think, well, I'm a stupid person. I just got to hurt them to do my job. Oh, well, it's their fault because they're so attached. You know, but to think, wow, you know, this person was, they were hoping they were going to contribute to the program and they were hoping they were going to do something and they had thought about it and they were also in the mood of preaching and here they're feeling that I'm disturbing them and therefore they're angry. To some, make some at least attempt. We won't always succeed. The other person may not always accept you, but at least to make that effort, at least to look both ways. How are other people going to be feeling? Let me try in advance to connect. And what you'll find is that taking that little bit of time saves you a lot of time and energy in the long run. I'm talking to myself. I'm definitely talking to myself. But, you know, we think, I want to be efficient, I want to get things done, and therefore I'm just going to kind of bulldoze through everything, and I'm not going to take the extra 30 seconds or the extra minute to try to connect with people, and boy, we pay for it in the long run. You know, then you have a damaged relationship and this and that, and then you got to spend 5 years settling the thing, and there's letters back and forth, and you know, why not just do it in the first place? So hopefully Krishna doesn't give me an opportunity to practice this sometime in the next hour. That's sometimes what Krishna does to me after I preach something. He says, okay, let's see how well you can do this. All right, I think we'll read the purport tomorrow. Thank you all. Bye. Bye.